We kick off hour number two of the program. SEC Media Days rolls on today, wraps up. Who do we have today? Vanderbilt, Auburn, and...
I don't know.
That's kind of reverse order. I think Derek Mason goes last, Gus Malzahn, and whoever else we haven't heard from. It'll be pretty boring today.
Yeah.
Wait, Saban?
Yeah, they're up
Never
first.
Never mind.
No, they're up first today.
Yeah, it will be electric. Because Nick Saban...
At least in the morning session.
Well... They'll amass. The dullards will amass in Hoover for a view of their savior, Nick Saban.
Who will look upon them as Cersei did King's Landing.
Well, Jeremy Pruitt talked about all the coaches on the staff, how many national championships they had, you know, been a part of. They know what it looks like to win at a high level. But one coach that no one's really talking about, was on the staff last year, has changed roles. He's a national championship-winning player. And Garantano and Pruitt both talked about him a little bit yesterday. That's Chris Winkie. And I kind of hate on Chris Winkie in my head a little bit, unfairly. Because the only Chris Winkie fly-on-the-wall stuff I've seen was when he was having to work with Jeff Fisher and the Rams and Jared Goff in his first year. And there weren't, to be fair, there weren't even that many winky cut-ups or anything. But Jared Goff didn't have a great year, so I kind of, in my head, are like, ah, Winky, not a good quarterback coach, which is completely unfair. I mean, it's Hard Knocks. Like, it's, you know, you see a few clips, they play the season, whatever. I mean, we've seen pretty good coaches be ruined by Butch Jones, like Bob Shoup, so I don't know why I would not give Chris Winky the same benefit of the doubt. I'm not saying he's a great coach. I'm just saying I probably unfairly at least dock him in my head for something that really has no bearing. You know, last year the quarterback play was inconsistent, just like the whole team. I wouldn't say that it was like you couldn't watch the games and go, oh, goodness, the this or that. But Winky wasn't the quarterback's coach last year. He's made that move. And Jeremy Pruitt said he wants – a guy just handling the quarterback, not an offensive coordinator that handles the quarterbacks, but someone that can just focus on quarterbacks. Pruitt said this yesterday about Chris Winkie. He said, quote, he's a good teacher. He's done a fantastic job with Jarrett. I thought it was important this time around to get a quarterback coach that can coach every single step, move, their eyes, that happens with a quarterback. Because when it's the offensive coordinator, he might be looking to left tackle. Do we have the right split with a tight end? We need someone to coach the quarterback every single snap because the ball goes through his hands. You can see Jarrett taking to the coaching. He and Chris's relationship is tremendous. Remember we didn't have a quarterback's coach at all?
Yeah. Interesting philosophy change here. Not only the fact that we're going to have a quarterback's coach, but I don't know, like with Tyson Helton, I guess it made sense, especially with the way the rest of the staff was broken down. Because remember last year we had a safeties coach and a corners coach.
Mm-hmm.
So you were short a spot on offense, but you had Tyson Helton, who was offensive coordinator, quarterback's coach. And when Tyson Helton kind of got summoned to the field by Jeremy Pruitt, you probably lost a little bit of kind of the eyes in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
Feel that a lot of offensive coordinators like being able to kind of have the all 22 view every snap and talk, but being down on the field helps you talk to your quarterback, which is great. Now that he's shifted and given Ansley defensive coordinator responsibilities and all the secondary, obviously Winky, who Jeremy Pruitt mentioned later on the, you know, SEC Network stage, this guy won a Heisman, won a national championship after playing 6 years of professional baseball. Like, he's another one of our guys who has a championship, who knows how to coach. I didn't realize he was kind of one of the founders of IMG's football academy. Like, he kind of launched football for IMG. So we'll see kind of how this works out. I don't know if Chris Winkie is God's gift to quarterback coaching, but I like that we're putting an emphasis on an offensive coordinator who can do the, you know, where are we as an offense, and then a guy, once the quarterback comes off the field, that can grab him and go talk to him without sacrificing game plan. Because now Jim Chaney, I'm sure he's going to call, right? Pick up the phone on the sideline or put the headset on, and Jim Chaney will say, hey, when you see this, 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 and this. But then Jim Chaney needs to hang the phone up and start dialing up some ideas for the next series,
mm-hmm.
or tweaking some things about the game plan. But you, now you still have Chris Winkie right there teaching, coaching, discussing things with Jerick Garantano. I think that's a really good move. And again, this, we laugh about the time on Hard Knocks, but like Chris Winkie, he understands the game. Like, you don't get to coach quarterbacks in the NFL if you're just a complete and total idiot. So hopefully with Jim Chaney's knowledge of offense, quarterbacks, offensive line, you know, he's working with Jarrett. Now you've got Winkie kind of being the echo of Jim Chaney when Chaney's up in the booth, or, you know, working with the offensive line or dialing up plays or whatever. That's the way it should be. Like, you need your quarterback to be I don't want to say touched, but like, you always need somebody with your quarterback at the collegiate level, I think. I mean, it's one thing when you're Peyton Manning in Indy and you're basically the OC quarterback's coach yourself, right? Or when you're in Denver and Gase is like, well, what do you think about this? And Peyton's like, no, this. That. Okay. Young quarterbacks like Jerick Garantano, especially ones who have been through what he's been through, I want somebody with him all the time. I want every question he has to be immediately answered. I want every misstep, every missed read, every missed protection to be immediately discussed with somebody who knows how it should look so that he can fix it quickly. I felt like times last year and certainly the year before, man, Garantano, it just felt like he's on an island. Not only because, you know, nobody's blocking for him and he's getting creamed, but then he goes to the sidelines and there's no one there to spend real time with him. Because again, Tyson Helton, yeah, he's going to talk to him when he comes off the field, but then he's got to go talk to the offensive line. He's got to go talk to the receivers. I want somebody with Jerick Garantano all the time. So I love this move. And hopefully it pays dividends, and hopefully Chris Winkie is the guy. But even if Chris Winkie ultimately isn't, I like the direction that Jeremy Pruitt is going and saying, we will have a designated quarterbacks coach now at all times.
When Jeremy Pruitt was hired, I said the most important thing when you hire a coordinator who's a guru on their side of the ball, who's kind of proven it, because that's usually what happens. A coordinator proves that, man, they are just an expert at either offense or defense. The most important thing that they do is figure out the other side of the ball to become a good head coach. And we saw that be a train wreck in year one. And now you're seeing a lot of attempts to fix it in year two. And unlike some of the stuff we've seen before, like if Jim Chaney doesn't work out running the offense this year, then it doesn't work out. But that's kind of grading it with the results. I think it's also important to grade it right now. Like, hiring Jim Chaney and bumping Chris Winkie to quarterbacks and bringing in T. Martin and having an extra offensive guy on a staff with a lot of defensive experts already.
Yeah.
We talk about this all the time. That makes perfect sense. That's logical. I like it. Does it mean it's going to work? No, because it's sports. One team has to lose every week. You know, like mm-hmm. half the teams lose every week. So it doesn't promise that everything's going to be fine. So don't hear me say that. But unlike a lot of the decisions in the past, which we criticized in the moment and got criticized for, I think these moves deserve praise in the moment. And then you can grade the results kind of secondarily also. Garantano said, he talked about Winkie, you know, winning a Heisman, being in big games, playing in the NFL, and he said, so being able to draw back to him every single day to see whatever I did on film, whether it was right or wrong, is big for me. He pushes me harder than any coach I've ever had in the past year. I think it's helped me immensely for our quarterback room. For any future quarterbacks that we get, it's going to be a great attribution for them.
The moves make sense too, right? Like, this isn't Butch Jones hiring a buddy and saying, quarterback's coach.
Which happened, yeah.
This isn't Larry Scott being promoted from tight ends coach to offensive coordinator.
It's not Mike DeBoer being pulled off a desk somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, this is, again, like, I'm not saying Chris Winkie is the best quarterback coach in the SEC, but this is a guy who's coached quarterbacks at the NFL level. He played in the NFL, again, won a Heisman Trophy and a national championship at the collegiate level. He at least understands the game of football. And hearing Jarrett Garantano say that about Chris Winkie, again, like, I don't think at this point Jarrett Garantano feels like he owes anybody anything. I don't think he's going to lie and blow smoke for Chris Winkie if he didn't actually believe it. What's the point?
Well, what if, I mean, if there's been an error in the coaching of Jarrett Garantano from the beginning, it's been that people have been too soft on him.
Yeah.
So for him to say he's pushing me harder than anyone else, that's what I want to hear. If I, if I'd heard, oh yeah, I love Chris Winkie, we have a great relationship, he's a lot of fun to be around, that would to me be, it might be fine, but also it might be a red flag. Sure. You know, it could go either way.
No, I think Jarrett Garantano, when he came here, I mean, I think he was, I think he wants to be pushed. I think he wants to be
but
coached.
He was baby.
No, I know. I agree with you. I agree with you. He was told what they thought he wanted to hear, and I think that's what mm-hmm. turned him off. It's like, I don't think he was mad that he didn't start against Georgia Tech. I think he was mad that they lied to him. If you had just told him straight up, hey, here's where you stand, he's probably good.
Yeah.
But don't lie to him.
Right.
And don't tell him he's playing great when he's not playing great. He knows when he plays poorly. He knows when he makes the wrong read or doesn't switch the protection. Like, he knows this stuff. But by saying it's okay and not doing anything to correct it, you're just leaving the door open for the same mistakes to happen. And now it seems like with Chris Winkie, Jim Chaney, T. Martin to some extent, again, T. Martin, another national championship winning quarterback, right? Played a little bit in the NFL, played in NFL Europe. Like, there's quarterback knowledge on the staff now to where I'm confident when Jarrett gets coached, he's getting actual quarterback information instead of, well, I coach running backs at UTEP. Throw it a little faster, Jarrett. I mean, we nailed the Chico Canales. And no knock on Chico Canales. He never should have been hired for the quarterback position. Like, it just should not have happened ever. But it was Butch Jones reaching out to a buddy and throwing him a lifeline. This makes sense. Garrett just sent a message to me. He sent it to you, too. I don't know if you've read it yet. He said, I used to not be too big on Chris Winkie until I went to their coaching clinic this last year, and his quarterback talk was fantastic. Garrett says, I'm not saying he's a great quarterback coach, but he was very informative and a great communicator. That's one thing Pruitt said yesterday 50 times.
Mm-hmm.
Communicate. That's one of the things that we said about Jim Chaney when we were just discussing him as a candidate. What I've always liked about Jim Chaney is he's a genius, but he knows how to talk to the kids in a way that they understand it. He knows how to communicate the plan. He knows how to have fun and kind of be on their level, but he can deliver a message that makes sense, even if it's a difficult message, because he's such an effective communicator. Hearing that Chris Winkie is an effective communicator, that's very, very good news. I know T. Martin is a really, really good communicator. These are all very, very good things. Jeremy Pruitt, it seems like he's a very good communicator. You know, I think now that he's a little more comfortable with his staff and with his team, that's only going to, you know, prove itself even more. But he mentioned that about Derek Ansley. He said he's an unbelievable communicator. It sounds like this is – because what was one of the issues with Butch Jones? Like – false communication.
He said a lot, but he didn't communicate at all.
I mean, how many players were told one thing and then a different thing happened, or promised one thing and something else happened? I think Jeremy Pruitt and a lot of the guys on this staff, they're going to tell you exactly what they think. They're going to tell you what you need to fix. They're going to tell you where you're doing well and where you're coming up short. And I think that's what, I mean, if you're playing football at this level in the SEC, I don't think you want to be told just how great you are all the time. I think you want to be corrected when correction needs to take place.
Yeah.
I mean, kids know, players know when they're out there and they make a mistake. And our last staff was almost afraid to communicate failure. But if you don't communicate failure, if you don't address a mistake, you are doomed to continue to repeat that same mistake. This does not seem like a staff and a head coach in a program now that is interested in making the same mistakes over and over and over and over again.
We'll come back. Stick with us as we talk SEC football, SEC Media Days right here on 3 and Out. This segment of the program brought to you by Gold's Gym, the official gym of Three and Out. A lot of talk about guys getting bigger and stronger yesterday. If you want to get bigger and stronger, you can do that at Gold's Gym, the official gym of Three and Out. Go to goldsgym.com to find the location nearest you. And as always, we've got Davey Hudson with the Gold's Gym Fitness Tip of the Day.
For today's Gold's Gym Fitness Tip of the Day, listen to your body. Hold off on exercise when you are feeling sick or feeling very fatigued. Cut back if you cannot finish an exercise session, you feel faint after exercise, or fatigued during the day, or suffer persistent aches and pains in joints after exercising. Once again, safety is key, so make sure to listen to your body, and that is today's Gold's Gym Fitness Tip of the Day.
It's Gold's Gym, the official gym of Three and Out. Download the free 3-day VIP pass. You can try out Gold's Gym before you join. Tell them you heard about them right here on Fox Sports Knoxville. If you roll into any of the Gold's Gym locations, even if you're outside the Knoxville market, upstate South Carolina, western North Carolina, Chattanooga, they're all over the place. Goldsgym.com for the location nearest you. There's a lot of little things I want to bounce around to with SEC Media Days. So Dog Nation wrote a post about Kirby Smart's coaching staff, because we've been talking about Tennessee's coaching staff, and we debated, it's obvious to kind of point back. It's always been a thing since Butch Jones said, best staff in America. Like that, I don't know. For me, I'm always kind of grading the staff, because one thing I've learned probably more so in the last 5 years, kind of getting more into doing this show, is how we give the head coach deserves all the credit and blame at the end of the day, but who he picks for his staff actually impacts what happens on the field a whole lot more than I ever thought of, I guess, before we kind of got all into it. We talked about Butch Jones' just numerous missteps. Coach Pruitt yesterday said, we feel like we have one of, if not the best staff in the country. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you caught that line.
Yep.
And so I just happened to notice that the Georgia folks kind of profiling Kirby Smart staff now, which is interesting because obviously Jim Chaney from one to the other.
Mm-hmm.
Georgia has like a staff where their average age is 40. Three of them didn't play college football at all. They've got a lot of guys that played at some small schools, and they have very limited experience even as like big time coaches.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll give the Dog Nation writer, whoever this is, a little credit. Like, they don't really sheep it up for them. I mean, they don't really dog it either. They're kind of just like, hey, here's the new staff.
Yeah.
Here's how much they make. And this is an older article anyway. Let's wait and see. They do kind of say, well, but Kirby obviously is doing really well at Georgia. And the Tennessee in me is like, is he? Has he already kind of peaked there?
You've been mentioning that it's possible for
it
a while.
It is possible.
Now.
I mean, you only get so many opportunities to break through. And in college sports, unlike any other, you know, in the NFL, you break through and win a Super Bowl, you get the last draft pick. You know, and it's supposed to be even for everybody. In college football, you win the national championship.
You're probably going to have a really good recruiting class.
You get to walk around with that ring on your finger and go into every living room and say, in, you know, whatever year it was, we were the best there was. So it's different, and you better take advantage of those opportunities, especially during a rebuild. And I think, you know, Jeremy Pruitt hopefully will hit some of those markers the next year or two where it's like, this is your moment to get that big signature win. This is your moment to win X amount of games for the first time. This is your moment to show that now you can beat the top teams in the conference and then use that to then reload with even more talent and then beat even better teams and all that kind of stuff happens. But I don't know. For Georgia, it's pretty weird. They lost Jim Chaney to Tennessee. Mel Tucker was their defensive coordinator.
Almost our head coach.
Philip Fulmer liked him. He was in the final three. He got mm-hmm. interviewed. Up when Fulmer was doing the thing at the coaches deal. So, I mean, Georgia's going to pay $375,000 less this year for their assistant coaches. Tennessee is going to pay, I don't have the Tennessee's going to pay $800,000 more than Georgia this year for their assistant coaches.
Well, we're not afraid to pay people anymore around here. That's good.
So I just thought that was a very interesting dynamic as we really look at the team that you ultimately, the level you need to get back to win the SEC East. I mean, that's Georgia right now. And kind of where we are at Tennessee. I mean, like we said last segment, the coaching decisions have all made perfect sense for Jeremy Pruitt. Like there's I don't see any way you could knock what's happened throughout the offseason on that front, which is refreshing, very refreshing.
What do we think about the discrepancy though? Like, is it weird that we're $800,000 ahead of Georgia? Like, are we over? I mean, I guess we don't know yet, but does it feel like we're paying the right people the right amount of money, or does it feel like we're just trying to throw money at a problem? Or do we know yet?
Can I say both? Like,
sure.
I mean,
that's where I'm at.
I think it makes sense to pay these guys because they have proved that they are great coaches. They've proved that they know what it takes to win. And I think you're paying a little bit extra just to make sure that you're good, if that makes sense. Like, don't pay for mediocre coaches. Like, you want Tennessee to be back. I'm okay with paying $800,000 more if that speeds up the process and it are the right decisions.
Well, it eliminates the risk of having someone that's totally in over their head, a la Tyson Hill.
Right.
It eliminates that risk. Jim Chaney, if Jim Chaney is awful as an offensive coordinator this year, it's Jeremy Pruitt's fault. If he's awful. Now, there might be some like working out the kinks stages.
What do you mean by
there
that?
There might be some
explain what you mean by that. I think I know, but I want to make sure.
What I mean by that is if this offense comes out and has no identity, has, you know, Chaney starts in the box and they struggle to get anything going in the run game or the pass game. And then three games into the season, Pruitt's like, I made a decision and Big Jim's going to come stand beside me as he calls the plays to make sure we get this thing corrected and fixed. And then Chaney's now standing on the sideline beside Pruitt. And, you know, the play clock's running out because they can't even get the plays in right. And then Pruitt's, you know, screaming at Chaney and at like, this is obviously all worst case scenario.
Sure.
And they have this toxic relationship and Chaney's like, screw this, and goes back to Georgia next year because their offense wasn't as good either and Florida won the East. That's on Jeremy Pruitt. Like, we know Jim Chaney, when given enough control, can field not just a good offense, but a good offense that either features a lot of running the football or a lot of passing the football. And that's what you're hiring. That's what you're paying for. You're paying to lower your risk level of somebody being a complete disaster. Tyson Hill was a complete disaster. I think some of that was Jeremy Pruitt's fault. I think a lot of that was Tyson Hill's fault. It's like any relationship. If there's a relationship between two entities or two people and it doesn't work out, it's both people's fault on some level. And it really doesn't make sense, or it really doesn't matter to spend time arguing over the score of who's more fault it was, generally. Like, if it didn't work, it didn't work, and it's everybody's fault. That's at least kind of the way I look at it. Jim Chaney, with given enough control, is going to put a plan in place that should lead to success.
He's proved it at every stop.
Right.
So to your point, it's Pruitt's fault. Like, he's
If the offense isn't elite this year, I'm not going to necessarily blame Jim Chaney.
No, I use the word awful.
No, I know. But that's right. The distinction I'm trying to make. I mean, building your...
If it makes sense and you get out talented a little bit here and there, yeah, and you're inconsistent, yeah, that's one
right.
thing.
But talent is obviously a thing. So that's where I'm at. Like, if what I see makes sense and our guys just aren't good enough to do it in a way that wins games, I'm not going to necessarily blame Chaney for that, but I'm with you 100%. I just want to make sure that I'm not saying if Tennessee goes 6-6 and doesn't lead the conference in offense, you know, I mean,
if they're middle of the pack and they go 6-6,
You wait for year two.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's all. I'm just trying to, you know. By the way,
you've eliminated your risk of hiring somebody that is never going to be any good at that position.
Yeah. So Georgia's entire pool dropped to what, you said?
It went down $375,000.
From last year?
Yeah. And we're paying $800,000 more than they are this year.
That would put Tennessee close to the $7 million range. Now, these are last year's numbers. Last year, Georgia was at $6,420,000 for just assistants.
Wait, say that one more time. I missed that number.
$6,420,000 for Georgia's assistant. I do not think this includes
that was last year?
Strength coaches.
Yeah, it's got them at 6.045 this year.
6.045.
So that's down the 375-ish.
So yeah. Tennessee is at 6.845
based on these numbers.
That would put Tennessee's staff as the second highest paid in the country last year.
Okay.
Behind Ohio State and just ahead of Clemson. So if you're talking about staff, and here are the other teams in the top 10, in case you're wondering, like, oh, does paying a staff a lot of money ultimately mean you're a really good football team? Number one was Ohio State. They had a pretty good year. I don't know what theirs will be this year because I don't think Day is making nearly what Urban made, but you get the point. Two, Clemson. Three, Texas A&M. Four, Auburn. Five, LSU. Six, Georgia. Seven, Alabama. Eight, Texas. Nine, Michigan. 10, Florida State. Again, based on last year's numbers, Tennessee would have the second highest assistant salary pool in the country.
Some of that is obviously going to be once when the team's good, then you pay them a lot to stay.
Yeah.
You know, you're just give them extensions and stuff. But
well, I'm just saying, like, Texas, I mean, Tom Herman's only been there a couple of years.
Right.
Obviously, they paid Harbaugh a ton to go to Michigan. Florida State, they were in a pickle and really had to go get anybody, so Taggart had, like, all the leverage in that one, which would explain why they're up there, but they're going to be at 10th. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, everybody else, like, you know, Malzahn just redid his staff and probably had to go get out the checkbook to get some of these guys. I thought it was funny yesterday. They asked Jeremy Pruitt, like, what it took to get Jim Chaney from Georgia. And he said, well, he had coached here before. He really, really likes Knoxville. He likes the University of Tennessee. He saw an opportunity. And at the end of the month, his pay grade ain't too bad either. So Jeremy Pruitt basically saying, yeah, there's a lot he liked about Knoxville, but we compensated him. Like, we paid him the money it took to get him here because he was the guy I wanted. It's, again, like, I'm not saying that, I mean, you could hire the three of us and pay us $2 million a year apiece. That doesn't make you a good staff. It doesn't mean you know what you're doing. But if you look at the numbers and then look at what our coaches have accomplished, you're starting to see that, hey, maybe this really is one of the best staffs in the country on paper, and now we're waiting for them as a collective to prove it on the field.
Yeah, I mean, it is as a resume. Like,
I'd put it up against anybody's.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I looked up stuff about Georgia staff, because, I mean, there was a point when even some of the media members here were trying to talk up Butch Jones' staff, and it was like, man, we're like next to last in the East. We're down there with Vandy and Kentucky.
There were coaches on that staff that I really liked. Like, I liked John Jancic. I thought John Jancic was a really good defensive coordinator.
I watched some of the Oklahoma game a while back, 2015, when John Jancic's defense shut down Baker Mayfield, Sterling Shepard, and D.D. Westbrook for most of the game.
Three quarters?
And it, yeah, maybe want to pull my hair out.
You know, that's what's kind of weird. If you look at John Jancic, that happened a lot where Tennessee's defense was really good for two, three quarters, and then the same things that plagued Bob Shoup in the fourth quarter were what plagued John Jancic. And I'm really starting to wonder if a lot of those fourth quarter, you know, rush three, have a spy calls weren't coming from the defensive coordinator all the time. Because the exact same pass rush that got you beat at Florida when Callaway took it down the sideline, the exact same pass rush that was the Hail Mary at Florida.
Yep.
Those are two different defensive coordinators. It's the exact same play. They also rushed three with a spy when, was it Aaron Murray, was trying to throw for the end zone in year 3. Like, that is starting to feel like maybe that's just a Butch Jones call. Hey, it's fourth and big play time. Don't look stupid. Let's just rush 3 with a spy instead of dropping into, you know, an umbrella-type coverage and or at least sending 4, leaving a linebacker on the field on 4th and 18 instead of another going dime. I mean, I don't know. Like, maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. But it was amazing how many times John Jancic for 3 quarters and Bob Shoup for 3 quarters would look like $1 million. And then all of a sudden it's like, what are we doing?
I also think you had Butch Jones pulling the reins back on the offense in those games when they had the lead.
100%. That's what I'm saying. I think it was, hey, we're going to go to our conservative stuff. So don't get beat over the top. Don't get beat flushing a quarterback out of the pocket and having him run on you. And then, by the way, we're going to just hand it off 3 times and punt. So you're going conservative on offense while also telling your defense to go essentially like weak.
I mean, okay,
you're de-throttling on both sides of the ball at a time when you really should do to neither, but it one if any, but never both.
I mean, to me, that Oklahoma night, like, that's the night Butch Jones was no longer going to be the guy at Tennessee. Now that you have all the hindsight, it really was that night.
Yeah,
listen, like, that Oklahoma team came into the game with the announcers talking about how great their offensive line was, and the big question was the new coordinator, Lincoln Riley, and the new quarterback, Baker. Listen to the skill guys they had on that team.
I don't want to. I mean, it'll make me feel good for the 3 quarters of my memory, and then that last bit, I'm just going to cry. Go ahead. It's fine.
No, it does make me feel good, because if with the Butch Jones recruiting, like, that team from a talent standpoint for Tennessee was good enough to be on that level.
Yeah.
So if Butch Jones could do that, I have confidence that Jeremy Pruitt can get us back to that level rather quickly.
Mm.
So to me, it's good news. It's not bad.
I see what you're doing now.
But they were talking about the strength of the team being the offensive line. The announcers even said Oklahoma has to take advantage of the fact that they're better than Tennessee, especially in the middle of the line. They're like, Tennessee is awesome on the edge with Derek Barnett and Kurt Majette. Up front, like in the middle, is where Oklahoma's got to like get their running backs going. Their running backs were a guy named Joe Mixon.
He was pretty good.
And Samaje Perine.
Also good.
And Robbie Anderson, who tore it up before getting injured the last couple years, got air-casted during that. They had basically 3 NFL-level running backs on that roster. They have Baker Mayfield, who is...
Didn't they have the Ford kid, who was also really good?
Ford. What? At running?
Yeah, at running back.
Their wide receivers were NFLers Dede Westbrook and Sterling Shepard. Their offensive line, I don't know all the names, but again, strength of the team. Baker Mayfield was your quarterback, and, you know, Eric Stryker, who was a pretty damn good defensive player too. And
yeah, they were good, man.
But the Tennessee guys, like, were good enough, like, should have won that game. I mean, Josh Dobbs and Alvin Kamara. I mean, that was when Butch ran Alvin Kamara on what, 3rd and goal from the 1, and then kicked the field. I mean, you know,
Alvin Kamara had 5 touches in that game.
Like all the Hurd, we were mad after that game that Hurd wasn't used better. Like, Jalen Hurd's in the NFL
on
now.
On the 1.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jalen Hurd's in the NFL now. Like, you had you had Dobbs, who, it's like Mike DeBoer level 1 plays worked and got you a 17-0 lead, and then you could not go to the next level. You couldn't. It's like Nebraska running triple option, then when you sell out to stop the damn thing, that's when they hit the tight end and no one's covering him. He runs for 60 yards for a touchdown. Like, we never had that last little layer. But Butch Jones, with his recruiting, had Tennessee with enough talent like that night to beat a program that was going to go on and, you know, under Lincoln Riley and be at the top of college football. So after all the reality check the last couple days with where we have been, it made me hopeful, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, I was like, well, as bad as Butch was, I mean, a few good recruiting classes, and Tennessee was right there. They just didn't have a coaching staff, and that's what we've been talking about. That's why it all ties back in. I feel like we have a coaching staff now that if you'd handed that team to this coaching staff, it'd have been a whole different ballgame.
Well, that's the thing, and I'm not – like, if all things are equal, like, Tennessee's going to recruit itself a little bit. Like, as long as the writing isn't on the wall, right? Like, Dooley's last year, Butch's last year. Like, as long as things aren't just clearly destined to crash and burn, like, Tennessee will recruit itself to a degree because of the facilities and the fan base and the passion. Like, that's just going to happen. Like, you're going to get good players. And with good players, you can have bad coaches that can mask it for a little bit. So now I'm hoping with all these good to great coaches, you can get those good players, make them what they're supposed to be, which is good, and then go and get those five-star difference makers, those real blue-chip players. And if that's the case, yeah, then this could be a much quicker turnaround than any of us thought. I mean, I don't know like what the number is to be back, but I mean, if these coaches are as advertised and the players that we have now are good enough, yeah, I mean, you could see a big upswing this year, next year, you know, similar. And then by year four, it's like, okay, look at the depth here. Look at this guy. I mean, you could be really, really good in 4 years, easy at a place like Tennessee with good coaching. You can have a super talented roster in 2 or 3 years.
Sure.
Like super, super talented. Now, Butch Jones hit the trifecta because he did a pretty good job of selling, and he had the legacy classes, which, like, when I say the legacy class, obviously you got those handful of legacy players, but they were all 4- and 5-star guys who then attracted other really good players. So you kind of hit lightning in a bottle a little. Jeremy Pruitt's probably going to have to work a lot harder initially, but with the better coaching, the dividends will actually probably pay off faster, and it could be one of those burns that lasts for a long, long time. Assuming, you know, Bama doesn't steal him away or some crazy off the field thing. I'm just saying,
sure,
it's there. Like, it's right in front of you. Like, the pathway to fixing this damn thing finally. And that's why I like so much when guys on the SEC Network stage, former players, former coaches, they're not saying things like, yeah, he's recruiting well. They're saying things like that, and boy, this is a football coach.
Yeah,
boy, I mean, that staff knows ball.
Got some more thoughts on that, too. We'll stay on this topic and wrap up hour number two next. Looking kind of dumb with a finger and a thumb in the shape of an L. Final segment, hour number two. You know, Houston, we talk about the record all the time. The more I think about it, I don't know if this changes my record stance, but the more I analyze this season, the more I think there's going to be a lot. I think it's going to be the opposite of last year. I think there's going to be a lot of close games. I think you're going to see Tennessee has made up the gap. Not just in talent, but in how the coaches are able to give those guys kind of clear instruction before and during games. And I think Tennessee's gonna just play a lot better execution football.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not trying to get the hype. Well,
when you're not as talented, like, that's one thing you have to do. Like, if you execute as the less talented team, that's the way you give yourself a shot. And then you wait for a moment, right? That's what Tennessee did against Auburn.
Well, the more I look at it, like, I think the talent's going to be close enough with all of these teams on this. I think you're going to be more talented than BYU. I think you're
obviously the three other out-of-conference games.
Right. I think the games I'm talking about are Mississippi State, South Carolina, Kentucky, Missouri, and Vanderbilt. I think all of those games are either – I think all those games are probably really close for a long time. And hopefully in some of the worst teams out of that group, you assert yourself as the more – like, hopefully in the Vanderbilt game, it might be close for a while, and then you're the one pulling away instead of the opposite. But it would not shock me if all of those games are just closed for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that's, you know, we talk about kind of the reality check of where we are. I think that's kind of where the program is right now, is on par with those teams. And then, to your point, like, Florida is kind of that, like, if you went to the Swamp and beat Florida, to me that'd be like beating Auburn last year. You play really clean, don't turn it over at all, which will be a shock.
Especially against Florida.
In that matchup, just with the curses and the ghost stories we have there.
Eight turnovers last year, we kind of...
Is that what we said? Like, 7 and a safety, I think. So Or 6, a turnover on downs, if you count that, and a safety.
And a safety. And I think we counted the missed onside kick.
Oh yeah, just kidding.
Yeah,
that's not really.
I mean, we had it like that. Oh, okay. You had it and okay. lost it. So maybe it was nine.
I was actually having that same thought, Nate. And is it crazy for me to think that we had that scenario of like, would you rather take 5-7 with all close games or 8-4 in blowouts? Is it crazy for me to say that I could see the Vols going like 7-5, 8-4 without any blowout losses? I mean, excluding Alabama.
Nope.
More likely than like a 5-7 season.
Nope. I think that's a real possibility. I mean, that's obviously on the high end of the optimistic scale, but I don't. It's very. I mean, hell, Lane Kiffin went to Alabama and hung around. Butch Jones went to Alabama and hung around. So I don't think it's crazy to think Jeremy Pruitt this year would go to the swamp and hang around. I think going to Alabama this year, you're probably getting clobbered. But other than that, no. I mean, a fairly close loss at Florida. It's after a bye week for Georgia. If you're 3-1 and you went to the swamp and like that would really hurt for the first week, but then there's a bye week and everybody watches college football again and Tennessee's just off, right? And now it's okay, we're 3-1, played pretty well at the swamp, but you know, lost by 9, I don't know, whatever it is. And now we got Georgia. Well, nothing to lose. Let's take our shot. People get excited again, right? Like,
yeah.
And the place will be, you know, you get a good time. So you get the, I don't know what it is, 7 o'clock game. Place is good weather on October the 5th. Beer sales going on in the stadium. Place is lit. You get a couple good things go your way early. Or maybe it's like that.